Lieutenant Governor Lowell Thomas. And as they're filing in now, the General Hubbard, we can see at the head of the chambers, already in their seats, the clerk and assistant, the governor's secretary, and photographers walking and moving around. The clear, bright, cool day in Juneau, Alaska today. And calm, too. This will be the second time that we have joined together in this very nearly statewide broadcast. One of the few times in which the state is connected. We're connected with many radio stations, television stations, Anchorage, Fairbanks, many communities in the Bush area. And since statehood in 1959, four governors have made the walk from their office on the third floor down the stairs to the legislative chambers on the second floor of the state capitol. This is Governor Hammond's second state of the state message. He was here just very nearly a year ago, approximately a year ago, somewhat delayed, as we may recall, by counts and recounts of our election results. Delayed his budget address. In that address, he outlined his program for the coming year. State of the State address is required by the Alaska Constitution, and it's probably the major speech given each year by the governor. The other speech that he gives, the budget message, which is scheduled to come down on Thursday, was somewhat delayed last year. In reality, he addressed the state, but because of the late counting of ballots, he was not prepared to make changes in the former Governor Egan's budget until sometime later. In the speech today, the governor will outline the legislation he intends to reduce, and he'll spell out his programs for the coming year. He'll set the tone of his administration in the future. Much work has gone into this speech by Governor Hammond. We've been informed by his aides that he has met and been in conference with all the commissioners of the state of Alaska, all the close members of his staff, and others. For the final speech, and the final points to be emphasized, the words that decided upon him. The speech that we're about to hear. It's difficult to estimate how long the speech will take, but I wouldn't judge that we'll be with you for the next half hour. The governor is confronted with many problems. Primarily, perhaps, is the problem of inflation faced by the state of Alaska. However, in recent weeks and months, we've heard problems that he has questioning the legality of Commissioner Andy Warwick holding the office because legislation passed which says that commissioners or state legislators may not hold positions for which they raised salaries. And recently the Supreme Court held that that was in violation, places some question upon the holding of the office of chief aide of the governor by former state senator Bob Palmer. Bella Hammond, the governor's wife, will be in attendance in the office today. We can't see her on the television monitor, but we understand that she will be in attendance. Certainly was here in times gone by. The Alaska Constitution requires that the governor make this address. And what we expect will happen is that the Speaker of the House, Mike Bradley, and the Senate President will call both of the houses to order in this chamber. And customarily, the President of the Senate presides over these meetings. Chancy Croft, they have they're already in position, and we noticed that veteran legislator, Senator Jay Couture, is conferring, visiting Chancy Croft. Also, Mike Miller is representative from Juneau, Representative Bradner, Speaker of the House, is in position, and we see that photographers and newsmen are surrounding those legislators as we wait for the session to come to order. The session is called to order, and then legislators go to the third floor and escort the governor then to this chamber. That takes a matter of a few moments. We've been informed by members of the staff that the governor is in his office waiting, and there's this call to order.
Senator Katsula?
Senator Katsula moves and asks unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and all senators be shown as present without objection. Representative Miller?
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent
that the roll call of the House be waived. Representative Miller moves and asks unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived. All members of the House be shown as present without objection. Representative Miller?
Of the ninth state legislature. Last year about this time, in one of your addresses to us, you said the relationship between an administration and a legislature is at best tenuous, at worst tempestuous. Neither honeymoon nor wedded bliss can ever be the common lot we share. Last year a parting occurred and expanded until now we've been separated for more than 6 months. But we're together again, anxious to know whether it's for reconciliation or recrimination. Curious to hear exactly what are your intentions. Ladies and gentlemen, the Governor of Alaska.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the legislature, fellow Alaskans. Today I want to speak to you about the state of Alaska and a combined journal of past efforts and design for new directions and rededication in this, the American Bicentennial year. But before I begin, I think it's important to explain in general what we have tried to do and why. It's been my hope, my goal as governor, to stimulate that discussion which brings decisions forward from the people where they can be ratified by us. Our determination is to tune government to the needs of the people, not tinker in it to the tune of special interests. Alaskans are perhaps the most involved, interested, and curious citizens in these United States, perhaps the world. This interest stems, I believe, as it was, and as we'd have it be, the product of and a program for Alaskans. With debts to no special interests but Alaskans, we've been free to do our best to hold that dream within our sights. Confidence in the credibility and competence of anything as he wrote it, Watergate. I must admit I find myself disappointed that it takes so long to get things done. But looking back to where we were a year ago, it shows we've had some success along with some humbles and some failures. We've won some and we've lost some. We've even lost a little sleep. But not so much as one new governor who told us that at first he'd had a lot of trouble sleeping. We shortly found he slept just like a baby. Slept for an hour, cried for an hour, slept for an hour, and woke up and cried for an hour. I sleep better because I believe most Alaskans share with me the belief that we must not allow ourselves to be overtaken by events, but rather take action well in advance of pressures which foreclose our options. During the past year, and with your aid, during the next, this theme can help us seek or save the Alaska we all want. Though I have enunciated my attitude on change repeatedly, there seems a kink in the communications cord. Of course, growth and change are foreordained, some good and some bad. To maximize the good will take careful orchestration. The sour note of zero growth, sounded by some for reasons of their own, fails to harmonize with either facts or our refrain. Let me play it once again. We wish to steer growth, not strangle it, unless, of course, it cannot pay its way. To simplify, consider the state an investment corporation and all Alaskans shareholders. We support that healthy growth, which will increase net corporate assets, but we will oppose unhealthy growth which costs, both economically and otherwise, the majority of stockholders in order that a few can make a handsome profit. What could be more sound or simple? If, for example, resource exploitation one would do can't yield a net profit to Alaska, one couldn't be allowed to do it. This state is a storehouse of resource goods and wares. We'd be imprudent storekeepers should we cut their price and sell them at a loss just to increase the growth of business. Make no mistake, there are some who'd have us do so. I'd rather do less business, but do it at a profit. That growth, at least, is on the plus side of the ledger. Now, some who harp on zero growth and attempt to do us damage, ironically instead, alarm unduly some enterprise they would attract. But let's not concern ourselves with zero growth, which in the view of circumstances is a clear impossibility, but rather double zero growth, which unfortunately seems all too easily to come about. But this is the fact that when I took this office, the state was spending almost twice what it was taking in. Double zero growth is that growth which provides zero for the state and zero for most Alaskan taxpayers. Outer Continental Shelf oil development, as proposed, seems to qualify in spades. In that regard, prospective OCS development has finally alerted many as to just what we've been talking about. Some types of growth can be malignant. With prospects of no revenue sharing, no bonus monies, and no severance taxes, crash exploitation of Alaska's OCS will not pay its way. Studies indicate Alaskan Gulf OCS activities could cost each Alaskan some $300. Now, that's a bum deal no matter how you shuffle it. The only ones who seem to favor it are those who can recoup not only their $300, but yours and mine as well. I can understand that attitude, but I'm not about to underwrite it. I'm not interested in subsidizing Standard Oil. Some ways, Alaska seems more a colony than ever, beset by forces from both inside and out, which seem to see Alaska as nothing but a giant energy receptacle, ripe for the plugging. Our concern, of course, is with the manner in which that extension cord would be inserted, carefully mating the best interests of the state with the best interests of the nation, or needlessly short-circuiting Alaskan interests, thereby blowing all the fuses on our future. Thus, we will continue those socio-economic biopsies of which I spoke to determine if prospective growth is malignant or benign. And we'll have no hesitation whatsoever to say no when the lab report demands. In Alaska, problems of administrative and legislative leadership are compounded by the fact that half the people view with delight the growth we've had, others view it with dismay. Thus, no matter which way one would lead, half think you're marching backwards. Despite what some in politics would tell them, the public is aware that problems facing us are not simply problems of leadership or finding a better man or woman to run for this office or for that. Surely, among the multitude in public office, there must be someone who could provide those qualities if that comprised the answer. Yet nowhere seems there anyone on the international, national, state, or local scene who seems to have the answer. Perhaps in the high candle power of mass media illumination, it's unlikely that the public will again follow blindly close behind a red-hot leader. They've been burned much, much too often. Thus, character, not charisma, could get a cooler look. And that's just fine, so it may force us all to play above our heads. I've told Alaskans that I would ask them what they wanted, rather than tell them what they're going to get. Some criticize this approach as indecisive. In truth, they criticize the democratic process. However, regrettably, we've become so conditioned in permitting a presumed omniscient big brother to lead us by the hand, too few notice when the course is led downhill. In this day of the anti-politician and the anti-expert, people no longer trust elected representatives or bureaucrats or experts alone to make the decision for them. They know full well that no one has a pocket full of easy do-it-yourself solutions. They want to be told the truth with all the hard edges left intact. They're demanding, I believe, a chance to participate in problem solving. Too long they felt left out. But the future is being determined for them by someone, somewhere, who never even bothered to ask them what they wanted. In that regard, we've expanded the public process with the Medical Malpractice Commission, the Growth Council, task forces on rural energy, corrections, fisheries failures, and numerous public forums on such issues as the Cook Inlet land trade and D2 land. Why? Simply because we don't have all the answers. We're going to continue to expand that process because I think the public's sick and tired of being conned by politicians who refuse to tell it like it is and instead would tell it as they'd like it. Simply put, no one person's got the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And those who would assert they have but demonstrate that fact. Since no one man has the only roadmap, what we need up here are many alternative visions of where Alaskans want to go. From this amalgamation, put forward positive images of tomorrow. The major question is, of course, what kind of Alaska do we want, both for ourselves and for our children's children? To find out, we must generate alternative images for Alaskans to debate. Feed in ideas for new technologies, new approaches to employment, to ecology, to housing, to health, community life. bearing in mind not just our clear-cut problems, but also the fantastic potential that we have. Everywhere I go, I find people starved for positive images of tomorrow. Make no mistake, I'll no longer settle for the curdled, spoon-fed, demagogic past. It's time we fed them some hopes with handle time. So we would promote anticipatory democracy. Anticipatory because we better start anticipating the future rather than just permitting it to come about. Democracy because unless we find ways to involve thousands of Alaskans in the process, we'll find the future staked out by a handful of corporate, political, academic, or other elitists, each of whom has carefully looked after number one, while no one is taking time to look out for the public as a whole. The Growth Council and the public forum are tools designed to solicit public input. Unfortunately, I've not yet learned best how to use them. However, during the past year, we've whetted those tools, and I believe that next year they'll be better wielded. I've asked the council to determine what people think our goals should be. First, to formulate the questions, and then ask Alaskans such things as, what's your view on population growth? Should we industrialize more rapidly, emphasize renewable resource enhancement and utilization, place more weight on recreational tourism, encourage or discourage community development in areas now uninhabited, build a petrochemical industrial complex, and many, many more. Now, last year at this time, the ship of state had skidded belatedly down dry dock ways where it had lodged during the campaign during some confusion as to just who to assume command. We were 3 weeks behind launching schedule. We hardly had time to select a crew, much less man the building. I regret, and in the undue haste with which we were compelled to address such chores, the legislature at times got caught downwind. Moreover, showering upon our respective decks was a veritable firestorm of major issues, either non-existent or barely visible on the horizon but 4 short years ago. Invasive action taken by each body had us running around in circles and occasionally bumping heads. Small mutinies spread, and when the smoke of battle cleared, it was hard to tell if anybody won, especially the spectators. Some felt we'd spent too little time sailing and too much time sowing wild oats, for which they prayed there'd be a crop failure. Now, all that is past, and I'm convinced we now have better sea legs. We better have, for with a staggering array of major issues begging resolution, we are all confronted by challenges unprecedented. Consider these, almost none of which had surfaced just 4 short years ago. How to brace for crash outer continental shelf oil development. Which gas pipeline route is best and how to prove it to outsiders? What option in the Cook Inlet land trade was in the best public interest? How to cure the malady of medical malpractice, not simply shift the sickness to another group of patients? How to find what needed correcting and corrections and then go do it? How to learn and launch into satellite communications without skyrocketing state costs? How to implement limited entry in a way both fishermen and fisheries could live with, well aware that both were dying when entry was unlimited? What to do about alarming declines in fish and big game stocks? How to degerminate those seeds for bankruptcy contained in our mix of collective bargaining, a merit system, and the right to strike, lest we reap New York's bitter harvest? How best to apply the brakes on that primrose path on which we plunged to where state expenditures were almost twice our income? How to shore up the shaky underpinnings of Alaska's local hire law without shattering its flimsy framework in the clock process? How to deal with that classic case of hind-tooth planning which first asked, shall we move the Capitol? And now requires the legislature to ask how much it's going to cost, and will we agree to pay the price? How to satisfy the so-called hooch case, which requires us to put high schools, or could require us to put high schools in all the villages? How to deal with D2 lands when Congress holds the cards, and kibitzers with interests at odds with ours far outnumber us and will likely call the play? And of course, it was the Cordova Road, the north-south runway, and what to do about all those wolves. We solve these problems? Of course not. Some have been diffused, others simply detected. Most remain ticking in that minefield through which we must pass together. It'll matter whose foot trips the trigger wire. Should we blow it, Alaskans will see us all go up in smoke come next election. Time permits citing but a partial list of legislation we'll propose and allows only brief discussion as to what has taken place in government this year. Let's look first at education. Last year, state assistance to the public foundation program was increased to 93%. I will submit a bill to increase that now to 95%, and as did last year's bill, stipulate funding levels a year in advance to facilitate planning by local districts. In addition, regional resource centers were established to provide services more economically to school districts, as well as four area resource centers for exceptional children. To accomplish regionalization of schools in the unorganized borough, districts have been designated. Soon, local school boards will be elected. I will introduce a second step, a bill to provide for a school construction grant program in regional education attendance areas. This program will more directly involve local areas in construction, operation, and maintenance of their facilities. The Department of Health and Social Services has been dramatically reorganized to more effectively deliver human services with greater quality and efficiency. I'm proud of the public health reaction to the outbreak of diphtheria and its immunization of over 185,000 Alaskans last November in about a two-week period. Truly a monumental shot in the arm. The Division of Public Assistance has developed new methods of data memory to ensure more timely delivery of services. New fraud detection program designed to guarantee that only those who legitimately qualify receive social and medical expenses. This year has already resulted in about $23,000 being returned to the state, and an additional savings of approximately $118,000 has resulted from the fact that some ineligible persons elected to drop out from the system rather than have the new system drop upon it. I will also introduce a bill to establish local health districts. This legislation will put services closer to the people through the option of creating local commissions for determining health care needs. I'm also submitting a bill correcting some inequities in the longevity bonus program and assuring automatic increases to cushion at least somewhat cruel inflationary blows to our old-timers. In the field of commerce, I will introduce several bills designed to protect consumers. For example, some occupational licensing boards created to protect the public, instead protect the professional and occupational groups they regulate, to strike a balance between those which provide services and those who receive them. I will recommend that two consumer members be placed on each and every occupational licensing board. For the $16,000 it will cost, I'm convinced it is worth it. I believe real estate promoters should have to describe exactly the land they hope to sell in land sales of more than 50 lots. Plus, another bill will require such additional disclosure in an effort to ensure consumer ability to make knowledgeable investments. I will introduce several bills relating to the regulation of insurance, including one raising the level of guarantee funds held to protect policyholders, and another prescribing unfair trade practices in this field. As proposed by my task force on corrections, I'm submitting legislation which would increase penalties for criminal assault and battery on a police officer, permit incarceration of intoxicated persons who are threats to themselves or to others, alter the definition of murder to reduce the burden on the state of proving intent to kill under certain circumstances, provide higher penalties for felonies committed with a firearm. And in that regard, I'm asked, do I believe in gun control? You bet. I've always controlled my guns and intend to keep right on doing so with no help whatsoever from the bureaucrats. Also, I'm submitting a bill providing for determinate sentences for second and third felony offenses. It's time we've admitted our present corrections policy is not working. We cannot hold down repeat offenses. Let's at least hold in those who would commit them. In this regard, I urge you to finish revision of our criminal code, for it is obsolete and must dovetail with determinate sentencing procedures. For those who've lost sleep reading the LA Times tirades, let me assure you that while crime is on the increase in this and every other state, so is this state's determination to provide measures necessary to crack down and stunt its growth. Moving on to labor, I'm deeply concerned about continuing employment opportunities for Alaska. Local hire was a phrase often heard but rarely enforced until January last. The regulations had been promulgated, they were not implemented. Apparently, it was assumed that resident preference would take care of itself through the benevolent, voluntary efforts of Alyeska, its contractors, or organized labor. Unfortunately, this has not been the case. The Department of Labor has initiated many programs to increase the number of Alaskans hired on the pipeline, including a residency card program to make identification of Alaskans easier for labor and management. However, in spite of the department's commendable efforts, increasing in 1975 the comparative percentage of Alaskan hire by about 25% over 1974, the law yet is not adequate. Thus, I will submit amendments, including one granting individuals the right to sue, thus adding enforcement capability. Last year, several deficiencies in the state's OSHA program were pointed out by federal evaluators. We have just received our new rating from that agency stating that Alaska has, quote, achieved a much more solid and stronger program. This is but one step in fulfilling my commitment to make safer working conditions for Alaska. I will introduce a workman's compensation bill amending the law passed last session. Rates, which insurers indicate are necessary in light of the new law, are appalling. Many Alaskan businesses are seriously concerned about their capabilities of paying them and competing economically. Even if they can, you, the Alaskan taxpayer, will pay that hidden cost. Our new bill will be fair while substantially upgrading workers' benefits from 1974 levels. This past year, substantial progress was made toward providing communication services. Of 100 smaller stations to be constructed by the end of 1977, 20 are now underway and will be operational by the end of March. Bear in mind, the second to the last thing I wanted to do was to get this state into the communications business. However, the last thing I wanted to do was jeopardize Alaska's long-term best interests. Last year, convinced those interests were in jeopardy, we believed that the capability of owning and leasing ground stations would provide bargaining powers which could reduce cost and increase beneficial options to Alaska. Since then, we've been granted most conditions we have asked for, and in the process already have saved substantial money over what cost would have been had we not exercised that option. Speaking of money, I believe we must place some non-renewable resource revenue in a constitutionally sound savings account, where it cannot be withdrawn simply to buy more bureaucracy. Only by so doing can most Alaskans ever expect to draw interest on that money. My veto of the permanent fund bill you passed last year was the most painful rendered. Be assured, that veto questioned only constitutionality, not the concept. Accordingly, I will introduce a joint resolution providing for a constitutional amendment permitting the establishment of such a fund into which at least 10% of all mineral resource revenue would go. I consider this perhaps the most important bill this session, and ardently solicit the support of all who worked so hard last year for such a measure. I'm extremely heartened to learn that prime proponents of this concept intend to introduce legislation establishing such a fund. Another holdover from last year is legislation dealing with the Department of Transportation. My express support for the DOT concept is prompted by past procedures in planning, transportation modes, and setting priorities, which flew directly in the face of what this administration is all about: sound planning through the public process. The old approach permitted arbitrary decisions by individuals with neither adequate cross-departmental assessment nor obligated public input. What little planning was done came from the top down. People were told what they were going to get and where, sometimes despite their opposition. Politics, not logic or priorities, often dictated what was built and what was not. For over a dozen years, the legislature has wrestled with DOT proposals. Currently, there are two concepts before you. After reviewing and listening to hours of debate, my preference is to establish the Department of Transportation as a planning and maintenance agency, to transform the existing Department of Public Works into a design and construction group. Department of Transportation would have the responsibility to plan, coordinate, and maintain all transportation modes within the state. No transportation projects could be initiated by any other department. At the same time, the Department of Public Works would independently determine life cycle costs of projects planned by the Department of Transportation, as well as their own public buildings, so as to ensure that Alaskans know fully what their capital projects will eventually cost. We sure don't know. Speaking of transportation modes, let me talk about the North Slope Road. This road will probably receive the most careful consideration ever given to a transportation route. We believe that land use planning and transportation planning must go hand in hand. Of course, the bridge now exists across the Yukon and will be open to public use as soon as pipeline construction permits. But how much road north of the Yukon will be open, in what manner, and when, must be the subject of continuing dialogue between the people of Alaska. I'm not introducing a bill deciding the fate of the Hall Road for that reason. No public debate has yet occurred. Very little study of the alternatives has been done. Till such does occur, any decision would be premature. Since this road will not be open to the public until the pipeline is completed, there is ample time for Alaskans to discuss this matter. Accordingly, I've directed the Alaska Growth Policy Council to initiate this dialogue through the public forum. Much work this year has been done on natural resource issues. From early on, we've taken perhaps the strongest stand of any state against the proposed Outer Continental Shelf program. It's interesting to note that our former, rather lonely position has become widely accepted in the state as more and more Alaskans learn that, as now constituted, the federal program brings us large costs and small benefits. We've not been negative or inactive. Instead, we have pursued every avenue available to force changes in the OCS program, and many have been made. Last session, we introduced a coastal zone management bill to begin planning for OCS impact. Although the bill failed, and perhaps it should have, much was learned during the debate and subsequent public hearings. That bill has been withdrawn, and I will introduce a new bill more sensitive to express concerns. For general purposes, existing state coastal management authority is adequate, but arbitrary and uncoordinated. A new bill would better enable the state to protect, use, and manage its immensely valuable coastal areas without doing violence to the interests of the local people. Most believe some control also is essential over large-scale coastal developments. To meet this need, an Energy Facilities Siting Act, if deemed imperative and consistent with our overall coastal management needs, will be one of the few bills introduced later. Should you pass the new coastal management bill, you will be setting in motion a year of study and preparation, not only for coastal planning programs, but also a year of public study of overall land use planning, which recognizes that no clean line nor impenetrable barrier separates coastal lands from inland. Alaska's lands, perhaps more than offshore oil and gas programs, hit Alaskans where they live. This administration believes that sound management, sound ownership patterns and practices are important. But we will not hesitate to use state power to influence them when in the public interest. Some decisions, while sound in policy, have not been easy. It was not easy to take a role in conflicting claims on Admiralty Island. But I believe years from now, it will be viewed as a vital, timely action. Similarly, the state has taken major roles in federal decisions regarding easements and corridors over Native lands, each time trying to balance the proper rights of Alaskan Natives with the long-term interests of the entire Alaskan public. Perhaps the boldest of these actions has been the Cook Inlet land exchange. Controversial from the first, this transaction is as large and complex as the issue it was intended to resolve. Pursuant to a congressional request, we worked for months with the other parties for a settlement. More important, support for it has grown as its logic becomes apparent. Now, though not obligated by law, I am bringing it to you, the legislature, with confidence, having seen it move through Congress, supported by our entire delegation. Should you disapprove it, I will not act. I earnestly solicit your approval. Now, there can be no high walls between state, federal, and private lands in Alaska. We are to provide systems to best manage, utilize, and properly protect Alaskan lands. And this is the heart of our D2 land proposal. Like the Cook Inlet Exchange, the better our approach is known, the better it's regarded. It is not inflexible, can respond to all reasonable suggestions for improvement. Take time to look at it and learn about our D2 plan. For if a cooperative system can be established, it will require future legislative involvement. Last year, you wisely established a section of planning in the Natural Resources Department. This group's attention will be turned to the selection and classification of state lands under the direction of the commissioner. Ultimately, this should increase availability of state lands to the people. Also, an early priority for the new planning section will be to address the future of agriculture in Alaska. In that regard, I'm introducing a bill which encourages agricultural development by restricting the deeds of agricultural lands to agricultural uses and uses not incompatible with agriculture. In the realm of fish and game, there are many problem areas demanding priority attention. One of them was addressed directly when some 3 months ago, I told the Department of Fish and Game to come forward with a long-term comprehensive plan for the rehabilitation and enhancement of Alaska's ailing salmon fishery. No longer can we tolerate simply more of the same. Phase one of that plan has been prepared and will be submitted to the public process through my newly appointed Fishery Council. I will ask that council to evaluate the plan and in turn make its recommendations. Once this is done, I'll be submitting a specific bond request to provide the necessary revenue. Two Department of Conservation or Environmental Conservation bills are worthy of note. The first establishes a local environmental enhancement fund from which court-awarded fines against environmental violators would be available to local groups to clean up and improve their community environment. The second bill increases state grants to communities for public water supplies and sewer systems. The administration will enter other bills intended to bring the forces of change and development in Alaska into consistency with the future Alaska I'm convinced most of us seek. Such a bill is the Forest Practices Act, which recognizes that forests are a precious resource of the state. The bill directed narrowly at forest practices, avoiding both unnecessary new laws, regulations, or bureaucracy. To help shape the quality of growth, we must provide recreation space and protect some key state lands. Two bills this year would serve that purpose. The first proposes a Talkeetna State Park. We will also introduce a bill which would recognize that a small percentage of Alaska's offshore areas should be off limits to oil development because other known resource values outweigh by far the unknown risks. Such an area clearly is Kachemak Bay. In my view, it was a poor policy decision to lease within the very heart of what is termed by some marine biologists as the most productive bay in all the world. This Kachemak also is the recreational backyard of our largest urban center. Many Alaskans wonder why they were not at least asked before such an action could be taken. We'd like to give them yet that chance. Whether or not the lease is there or deemed legal by the courts, I believe this issue is so crucial as to require we place before the legislature a proposal which, if passed, would enable us to repossess them for proper compensation. I regret the need to suggest such drastic action and do so simply because we must assure that in certain crucial areas, no one person should have the power to lease without your approval any more than have the sole power of condemnation. The primary purpose of the bill, of course, is to force open consideration of the desirability of oil development in Kachemak Bay. The legislature wants development to go. They may permit that to occur by refusing to authorize leasehold interest condemnation. But it will at least result in public scrutiny of the sale and its consequences. Once that has occurred, I think all Alaskans will live more comfortably with whatever decision may be rendered. No part of Alaskan oil transport poses such a threat as tankering of oil. This past year, we've made efforts to ensure that tankers engaged in Alaskan waters will meet the highest standards. In addition to testifying before congressional committees and the Coast Guard, my cabinet has been working closely with our sister West Coast states, pursuing an interstate agreement on tanker construction and insurance standards. On the national front, we have elected to present a major case to the FPC in support of the Trans-Alaska Gas Pipeline route and take a national, even international, role in promotion of that route. The Alaska Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board is now considering how to maximize benefits from royalties. Neither the administration nor the board believes a major immediate commitment of royalty gas is yet advisable as part of the gas pipeline struggle. Nonetheless, it has been made repeatedly clear that it is our desire that Alaska gas not be transported through Canada, that every alternative, including an interstate pipeline and banking the gas, will be explored before allowing this to happen. Few actions could be taken which are more supportive of an all-Alaskan route. To improve our ability to deal with such issues, I am proposing that the oil and gas management capabilities of the Natural Resources Department be consolidated and expanded. As Alaska assumes its role as a major oil and gas owner and manager, an investment of time, money, and planning now could guarantee millions for Alaskans later. Like it or not, I think we're going to have to get used to the idea of planning. There's been a good reason for us to have been afraid of planning in the past. Too often, the only kind of planning we have known has been technocratic, dominated by experts and bureaucrats, short-range, vulgarly, and stupidly economic-centered, as though if you could only get the economy to work, everything else would fall in place. Time we pulled our sights up a notch or two. The strategy of anticipatory democracy of which I spoke to pull us through the mire of paralyzing pessimism which seems to afflict so many, for it entails the vision of Alaska 2000 and what life up here would be if, instead of marching reluctantly hindsight four with our eye upon the past, we began to design conscious policies for transition to the future, remembering the while, of course, that much of what can be good about Alaska's future derives from what was good about Alaska's past. Alaskans, like all Americans these days, have a vague, unsettled feeling in the belly brought about by change. Here in Alaska, future shock comes in its highest voltage as the impact of accelerated oil development cranks up the generators. As our provincial insulation shreds, Alaskans fear that something they love dearly may be slowly slipping from their grasp. What can be done to tighten up our grip? First, we can identify those things which made Alaska the only place where most of us would care to live. Then make sure we hold them both in mind and heart when we make decisions. In that regard, I solicit once again both the patience and the prayers of those who, like myself, confess they don't have all the answers. Some time ago, I found the need to seek divine guidance, since unlike some in politics, I became aware that I could no longer speak it. Now, I suppose that revelation may cost me political points with those who thought perhaps I did have or should have that facility. But I'd rather pay a full price politically for decisions with which I can both live and die than pick up a pocket full of spiritual shortchange by settling for something from the bargain basement. So let's all move on upstairs, where quality, not quantity, is the hallmark, where shoplifters who drip us off get the bum's rush, and where the shelves are stocked sufficiently to sustain all our people, so that none be kept outside with nose pressed to the glass. To do less is to squander the great good fortune we've had bestowed upon us, the privilege to share in shaping the great land in such a way that we in turn are shaped as a great people. Shouldn't really be so hard. After all, we've got the prime ingredients, the best chunk of realty in all the world, and the finest folk on God's green earth. Thank you.
Yeah.
You have just heard Governor J. F. Hammond's 1976 State of the State address.
Without objection, for adjournment.
Jake Tula just asked unanimous.